Intrepid Pioneers. By the early 1930s, zealous pioneers were spreading the good news along the main northern railway line running from Yangon to Myitjina, a town near the China border. They also preached in Molamyine, or Molmin, and Sitwa, or Akyab, coastal towns east and west of Yangon. As a result, small congregations sprang up in Molamyine and Mandalay. In 1938, oversight of the work in Burma passed from the India branch to the Australia branch, and pioneers from Australia and New Zealand began arriving in Burma. Those stalwart workers included Fred Payton, Hector Oates, Frank Dewar, Mick Engle, and Stuart Kelty. All these brothers were pioneers in the true sense of the word. Fred Payton related, "During my 4 years in Burma, I preached throughout most of the country. Along the way, I endured malaria, typhoid, dysentery, and other health problems. After a long day in service, I often had no place to sleep. Yet Jehovah always cared for my needs and kept me going by the power of His Spirit." Frank Dewar, a hardy New Zealander, said, "I encountered bandits, insurgents, and bombastic officials. But I found that even difficult obstacles usually melted away if I was polite, gentle, humble, and reasonable. Most people soon realized that Jehovah's Witnesses are harmless." The pioneers stood in stark contrast to the expatriate population, who generally treated the local people with disdain. The pioneers treated people with respect and love. Their kindly approach appealed to the humble Burmese, who favor gentleness and subtlety over directness and confrontation. Through their words and deeds, the pioneers showed that Jehovah's Witnesses are true Christians. A landmark convention. Several months after the pioneers arrived, the Australia branch arranged to hold a convention in Yangon. The venue chosen was Yangon City Hall, a palatial building with marble staircases and huge bronze doors. Convention delegates came from Thailand, Malaysia, and Singapore, while Alex McGillivray, the Australia branch servant, brought a group of brothers from Sydney. With war clouds on the horizon, the widely advertised public talk entitled "Universal War Near" aroused intense public interest. "I never saw a hall fill so fast," said Fred Payton. "When I opened the front doors, hordes of people stampeded up the stairs and into the auditorium. In less than 10 minutes, over 1,000 people crammed into the 850-seat hall. We had to close the front doors on the surging crowd, leaving another 1,000 people outside," added Frank Dewar. "Even then, some enterprising young men slipped in through small side doors." The brothers were thrilled not only by the level of interest shown, but also by the diversity of the audience, which included many local ethnic groups. Up until then, very few local people had shown interest in the truth, since most of them were devout Buddhists. Those locals who are nominal Christians, mostly Kayins or Karens, Ketchins, and Chins, lived in remote areas barely touched by the good news. It appeared that the indigenous field was ripe for harvesting. Soon, the multinational great crowd foretold in the Bible would also include Burma's many ethnic groups. First Kayin Disciples. In 1940, a pioneer named Ruby Goff was preaching in Insein, a small town on the outskirts of Yangon. Finding little interest that day, Ruby prayed, "Jehovah, please let me find just one sheep before I go home." At the very next house, she met Hamwa Jiang, a Kayin Baptist, who readily listened to the kingdom message. Soon, Hamwa Jiang and her daughters Chumei, or Daisy, and Hininmei, or Lily, were studying the Bible and making good spiritual progress. Although Hamwa Jiang died soon afterward, Lily, the younger daughter, later became the first Kayin to be baptized as a witness of Jehovah. Daisy was also baptized. Lily and Daisy became zealous pioneers and left a lasting legacy. Today, hundreds of their descendants and Bible students serve Jehovah in Myanmar and overseas. Struggles during World War II. In 1939, World War II had broken out in Europe, sending shockwaves around the world. Amid the growing war hysteria, Christendom's clergy in Burma intensified its pressure on the colonial government to ban our literature. In response, Mick Engel, who cared for the literature depot in Yangon, approached a senior U.S. official and obtained a letter of authority to transport about 2 tons of literature on army trucks over the Burma Road to China. Fred Payton and Hector Oates took the literature to the railhead at Lasho, a town near the Chinese border. When they met with the official controlling the convoy to China, he nearly had a fit. "What?" he shouted. "How can I give you precious space in my trucks for your miserable tracts when I have absolutely no room for urgently needed military and medical supplies rotting here in the open?" Fred paused, extracted the letter of authority from his briefcase, and informed the official that it would be a very serious matter if he ignored an official order from Yangon. At that, the road controller placed a lightweight truck with a driver and supplies at the brothers' disposal. They traveled some 1,500 miles to Chongqing, or Chongqing, in south-central China, where they distributed the precious literature and even personally witnessed to Chiang Kai-shek, the president of the Chinese Nationalist Government. Finally, in May 1941, the colonial government in India cabled Yangon, ordering the local authorities to seize our literature. Two brothers working in the cable office saw the telegram and quickly told Mick Engel. Mick called Lily and Daisy and hurried to the depot, where they loaded up the remaining 40 cartons of literature and hid them in safe houses around Yangon. When the authorities arrived, the literature was gone. On December 11, 1941, 4 days after Japan attacked Pearl Harbor, Japanese bombs began raining down on Burma. That weekend, a small group of witnesses assembled in a tiny apartment above the Yangon Central Railway Station. It was there that, after a dignified scriptural discussion, Lily was solemnly baptized in a household bathtub. 12 weeks later, the Japanese army entered Yangon to find the city all but deserted. More than 100,000 people had fled toward India. Thousands died along the way from hunger, exhaustion, and disease. Sidney Coote, who fled with his family, died of cerebral malaria near the Indian border. Another brother was shot by Japanese soldiers, while yet another lost his wife and family when their home was bombed. Only a handful of witnesses remained in Burma. Lily and Daisy moved to Pien Ulwin, or Maemyo, a quiet hillside town near Mandalay, where they sowed seeds of truth that later bore fruit. A third witness, Cyril Gay, settled in Tharawadi, a tiny village some 60 miles north of Yangon, where he quietly lived out the remainder of the war. A joyful reunion. When the war ended, most of the brothers and sisters who had fled to India began returning to Burma. By April 1946, the Yangon congregation had 8 active publishers. At the end of the year, when the congregation had grown to 24 publishers, the brothers decided to hold an assembly. The 2-day assembly was held at a school in Insein. "I returned from India to find that I was to deliver the hour-long public address," recalled Theo Syriopoulos, who learned the truth in Yangon in 1932. "Up until then, I had given only 2 5-minute talks at meetings in India." The assembly, however, was a great success, and over 100 people attended. A few weeks later, a Kayin community leader who was interested in the truth offered the congregation a block of land in Alon, a riverside suburb near the center of Yangon. There, the brothers built a bamboo kingdom hall with seating for about 100 people. The congregation was bubbling over with joy. The brothers and sisters had survived the war with their faith intact and were ready and eager to press on with the preaching work. First Gilead missionaries arrive. Early in 1947, a group of excited brothers gathered at the Yangon docks to welcome Robert Kirk, the first Gilead-trained missionary to enter Burma. Soon afterward, three more missionaries arrived: Norman Barber, Robert Richards, and Hubert Smedstad, along with Frank Dewar, who had pioneered in India during the war. The missionaries had arrived in a city ravaged by war. Countless buildings were burned out shells. Thousands of people lived in flimsy bamboo huts that lined the roads. People cooked, washed, and lived in the streets. Yet the missionaries had come to teach Bible truth, so they adjusted to the conditions and got busy in the ministry. On September 1, 1947, a branch office of the Watchtower Society was established at the missionary home on Signal Pagoda Road near the heart of the city. Robert Kirk was assigned as branch overseer. Soon afterward, the Yangon congregation moved from the bamboo hall in Alon to an upstairs apartment on Bogalese Street. This was just a few minutes' walk from the Secretariat, a majestic edifice housing the British colonial government, an administration whose days were numbered. Civil War erupts. On January 4, 1948, the British handed over power to the new Burmese government. After 60 years of colonial rule, Burma was independent. But the country was engulfed in civil war. Various ethnic groups fought to establish independent states, while private armies and criminal gangs vied for areas of control. By early 1949, rebel forces controlled most of the country, and fighting broke out on the outskirts of Yangon. While the battles ebbed and flowed, the brothers preached cautiously. The branch office was transferred from the missionary home on Signal Pagoda Road to a large upstairs apartment on 39th Street, a secure area housing several foreign embassies and just a three-minute walk from the general post office. The Burmese army slowly asserted its authority, driving the rebels into the mountains. By the mid-1950s, the government had regained control of much of the country. However, the civil war was far from over. It has continued in one form or another down to the present day.